This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. It is episode 415, which means we are one episode away from 8 years worth of podcasts. It's been a good week. Got a lot of good things done. Didn't quite get all the things done that I thought I was going to get done because I had a few detours this week, but, you know, some weeks are like that. And next week, hopefully, we'll get back on some of the main projects and go from there. There may be some extra noises today. Special effects. That's what we'll call them. Some extra noises. Hear that? That's because I was going to leave work right at 4:45. And then I got talking with one of my managers, and so I didn't actually finish talking to him until 4:45, and then I had to log my time, and then I had planned to take all the recycling plastics down to the Franklin Recycling Center, since I save all my plastic bottles at work and put them in a special trash can, and then I take it down there. I volunteered to take the rest of the plastics down there. So it's been several months since I did that. So needless to say, my car is filled with plastic bottles that go to the recycling center. The recycling center closes at 5. I got there at 5:01. But, you know, the poor guy was closing the gate. And I rolled out my window and I said, "So you're closing?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm closing." I said, "I tell you what, I'll just see you tomorrow." And he said, "Okay, thank you." So she wants to go home. You know, he wants to go home. So anyways, we'll get that done tomorrow, which just means I'm going to be transporting plastic bottles here for a little while. That's okay. So work's good. Editing's going good. I did land the book last Sunday, and I think we're fine. I think I've made it out of the woods. I haven't actually read through it yet because I'm trying something new. I went ahead and signed up for Grammarly, and it certainly finds a lot of stuff. Some of it's good and needed to be corrected. Some of it was just plain missed. Because while I was correcting those things, I would look over at a different sentence and say, "Okay, what's the same issue here, guys?" But it couldn't recognize certain words for how they were functioning, and so it got confused at spots. But all in all, did find a lot of stuff. Problem is the technical editing that I do usually only takes me a couple of days, and I've been doing Grammarly for 3 days now, and I have one more night to go. I have 300 plus items that it flagged in writing style, so of course I'm not going to be fixing all of those because that's my writing style. But I will fix some of them, and so I would expect that process with 300 items to go through is going to take me most of the evening. And then I get to start reading tomorrow. Yay! Start my read-throughs. Hopefully the read-throughs will only take me a week and a half to edit, read through, have to decide whether I'm not going to let Grammarly take one last crack at it before I call it done. But then at that point, I lay out the book using InDesign, figure out how many pages it is. Once I know how many pages it is, I know how thick the spine is. Once I know how thick the spine is, I can actually start working on the cover. Yada, yada, yada. Actually, I can start working on the cover ahead of time because I kind of fudge the spine and that kind of thing, but I do a preliminary layout just to see how many pages I'm at. I still don't have the costumes for the kids yet. That is going to be this weekend. I've got to order those, get those in. I was wanting to do them in American Gothic painting costumes, the painting American Gothic with the farmer and the wife kind of looking at him sideways. Those costumes they have there. But I was surprised how hard that was to find. I did already find some overalls and find a jacket for my grandson. But dresses and things, to find the right dress, because it's kind of an old-timey styled black dress, and then it has an apron. I'm thinking now at this point that I may just go ahead and go Amish, because I should be able to find Amish outfits, I would think. Get a little blue shirt for Asher and just go that direction. But this is where it starts getting exciting, because I don't actually have all the pieces yet for the cover in terms of the images. But I'll get those figured out. I know kinda,
excuse me,
what I want to do on it. And I know it's going to have a snake on it, because I built the snake already. I needed a snake that was coiling back and forth and then rising up and striking, and couldn't find anything. And I needed it for the backs of the books. And because I wanted it to stretch across the last four books. This is number six, so I was finishing up book five, and I wanted the spine to have a piece of that snake on it. So I had to do the snake when I was doing the final cover for book five. So I sat down one day and just got a bunch of pictures that were all of the same snake from different angles and things, and I just built myself a snake.
Hey, it's okay.
It's okay. If you don't look at it too close, that's what we're going for. Passable mediocrity. I think we achieved that on the snake. It'll be fine. But now I have it to where I can use it for the last two books in the octet. Surprisingly enough, I am only two books away from finishing up the first octet. And this is book six, so I've basically written six books already, so having two more books to write for the first octet doesn't seem that imposing. I came up with another word and it was like, nope, impounding, that's not the right word. Anyways, on the family front, we went ahead and buried my father-in-law last Monday. That all seemed to go fine. Was it last Monday or the week? A week ago? No, it was last Monday. It was last Monday. Buried my father-in-law last Monday. Sang for the funeral. That worked out okay. Everything was good. He's buried up here close. My wife is currently staying with my mother-in-law now just to help through the process. Get Nana through the process. And that's all fine. So I'm feeding cats and clean out litter boxes and all that kind of good stuff. So all is well. All is well. I had some other stuff to talk about today. More gender stuff. And I actually have kind of a thought that I want to talk about at some point. Maybe not next week, because next week is supposed to be the 8 years worth of podcast, if we can get everybody together. So it's not next week. We'll do just a recap of the year next week.
The week after that, though, I may
talk about gender some more. Because in all of the conversations that are going on about gender, and I had sent my daughter a video that I'd already mentioned its topic on a podcast, so I wasn't going to go ahead. Looks like we're starting to get some rain, so I will talk a little louder. I had already dealt with the topic once, and that is talking about the often quoted statistics, specifically with feminism, one of them being that on average, women only earn 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. And there was a Prager University video, podcast, whatever they call it, basically saying there is no gender wage gap in America. And they quoted all sorts of statistics and studies and stuff that say, you know, when people really look into this, look at the different work, look at the dangerousness of the work, look at how many workplace deaths there are for men versus women, all that stuff. When you factor all that kind of stuff is that the wage gap is negligible. So I'd sent that to my daughter, and then we were in talking about gender a little bit, and we were talking about, and I was just, you know, a couple of weeks ago, can't remember, talked about why beauty, why is it important for women to be beautiful, and for men to be brave and strong, why? And I do think it gets into some of those gender designations that are so important to us at this point. And I've been thinking a lot about the difference between the easily definable sex characteristics and what their purposes are and how they function because it's biology versus trying to define gender. That's a much more amorphous concept. Some would like to say it's completely definable. Some would like to say it's not amorphous at all. It's just straightforward as sex and biology. But there is an interesting thing, I think, in there when you step back and say, okay, we understand what the purposes of sex and biology are. What is the purpose of gender? What are we really trying to accomplish with gender? And I've been thinking about that, and it's interesting where that thought experiment goes. But for today, I have notes on another topic. I have notes on slime mold. I think I had probably mentioned this on a podcast many years ago, because it's been 8 years worth of podcasts next week. Many years ago, I had mentioned slime mold because slime mold is very, very cool. It's extremely cool. And I just am to the point where I just want to do something on science because science is so cool. I was talking with a buddy on Monday, and we were talking about science, and he was saying how much he loves science, and I said, I do too, and he said, I don't understand why people think that science is in conflict with God, and I said, absolutely, science is not in conflict with God. Atheistic materialism is in conflict with God, and many of the scientists are trying to use science to prove atheistic materialism is true, but that connection is not necessarily true. And it's not the only way that you can apply science. And I quoted him again, and he agreed that it was a proverb because I've been quoting it so much, I said to him, I sure hope this proverb actually exists. He said, no, that is a proverb. And as I've said in the past, science very firmly falls in the realm of the proverb that says, it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. And so I haven't done a real hard science here a long time. And I thought, I need something hard science. Slime mold. I love slime mold. There's a bunch of different talks on it. There is a TED Talk on slime mold. It's done by Heather Barnett, who happens to be an artist, but she works with a lot of biological things, and she actually had someone give her some slime mold and said, take this home, play with it. She started off her talk by saying, you know, it's not a mold, really. Or she said, it's a mold with an identity crisis because it's not a mold. She said, it's one of 700 known slime molds. Well, the one she was working with, Physarum polycephalum. That's close enough. One of 700 known slime molds belonging to the kingdom of the amoeba. It is a single cell organism, a cell that joins together with other cells to form a mass supercell to maximize its resources. So within a slime mold, you might find millions of nuclei all operating, all sharing a cell wall, all operating as one entity. In its natural habitat, you might find the slime mold foraging in woodlands, eating rotten vegetation, but you might equally find it in research laboratories, classrooms, or even artist studios. And that's because slime mold can do some really cool things. Even though slime mold has no neurons. Has no neurons, has no nervous system, has no brain. And yet, because of the way it reacts, it can do things that make it seem intelligent. And it only seems intelligent because it has only very, very basic abilities. It can expand and create and contract the individual little particles of it, the individual nuclei. Somehow it expands and contracts. And so all the little one cell organisms next to it, as they expand and contract, that can be felt and reacted to. It can leave a kind of trail of slime behind it as it walks around. And with those few abilities, and it knows how to consume food. So if it has certain foods it really likes, and if it gets near those foods, it can actually ingest them. I don't know how it does it. I don't know if it uses its slime to ingest them, but it can ingest them. And it does have a reaction to finding food. So it expands and contracts faster, I think. So with just those pieces, slime mold does some like really interesting things. When you put it in a dish, it starts expanding, looking for food. And it branches out into all these gorgeous patterns where it's just spawning different trails, just looking for food. When it meets itself, it can tell, it can recognize itself, and it can always also recognize where it's been because of the slime trail. When it finds foods, the speed of its contraction and expansion changes. So she said when she first got some slime mold, she was watching all this, and she said this pretty much impressed her because it's in essence just a bag of cellular slime, and yet it's mapping its territory, it knows itself, and it seems to move with intention. Now, you say, well, that doesn't sound like intention to me. Well, try this on for size. Okay, many years ago, a team in Hokkaido University in Japan filled a maze with slime mold. They joined it together, formed a mass cell, starts out thick in this maze. Through this maze, there are four paths. And like any maze, it has a beginning point and an end point. Then they put food at just the beginning points and the endpoints. Oats. Slime mold likes oats. I've seen the video of this. It's very cool. You can see the slime mold pulsing around and drawing back and pulsing back out and drawing back. Eventually, the slime mold actually figures out the shortest path through the maze. And that's where it concentrates its resources between the two food sources. It's very cool. She said, time and again, slime mold establishes the shortest and most efficient route between the food sources when people put it in different mazes. And it does this all by expanding and contracting individually, reacting, and those contractions speeding up or slowing down based on where the food is, and also based on the fact that it knows where its slime trails are. They said another study regularly exposed the slime mold to cold air. Slime mold does not like cold air. It contracts when it's around. Doesn't have neurons, doesn't have a brain, and yet they were able to train it like a Pavlov's dog, that when they did this at regular intervals with the cold air, and then waited and didn't do it at a regular interval, the slime mold still contracted at that time. So somehow, the little slime mold is doing good. There was also the classic test that was done with slime molds, where, again, some Japanese had a bunch of slime mold, and they laid out a bunch of food, and they put the slime mold in there, and you know what? The slime mold did the thing that it always did. It spreads out to the shortest path to all the food it can find, and it creates this intricate little web back and forth, you know, so you can transport nutrients, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. Except what was interesting in this case is that when the Japanese scientists laid out the piles of oatmeal, they replicated Tokyo and the surrounding cities. And lo and behold, if that slime mold did not choose, getting my mail, did not optimize itself to something that looked very, very much like the public transit system. I mean, it was really close. And the slime mold did it in 26 hours, whereas, I didn't turn quite enough. Now this car has the fresh smell of cedar in it. Didn't quite turn enough to not get past the trees. Yet another sound effect today. In 26 hours, it established a firm network between the different oats. And now there's nothing remarkable about this until you learn that the center oat that it started from represents the city of Tokyo, and the surrounding oats are suburban railway stations. The slime mold had replicated the Tokyo transport system, a complex system developed over time by community dwelling, civil engineering, urban planning. What had taken us well over 100 years took slime mold just over a day. Now, of course, there's a lot of other stuff in that, you know, because you've got to build stuff and you know, but that's really cool. That's really cool. So, anyways, we got that and got that and I got that. Slime mold. Gotta love it. And so she had a bunch of other examples and then what she does with it. How she works with it. Slime mold actually can solve... I'm backing into my garage. Can solve what's called the two-arm bandit problem, where you have a long stretch and you put the slime mold in the center, and you put food nearer to it on one side than the other side, and then you vary whether or not the two food sources are similar or whether or not one's greater than the other. They describe it as the two-armed bandit problem because in Las Vegas, when you're sitting at a slot machine and you're pulling the lever and pulling the lever and pulling the lever, you're trying to decide constantly, okay, am I getting paid out on this? Is this the best machine to be at, or should I get up and move to another machine? And maybe that will pay out better. So by making this kind of long tunnel and putting food at either end of it and putting the slime mold in the center, the slime mold had to kind of figure out how much it should branch out, what it should take, do that kind of stuff. And they said in the majority of cases, the slime mold would eventually make the right decision and concentrate on the food source that was greater, because it would explore enough and feed enough that it would balance that equation out. And that's pretty cool for something that doesn't even have a brain, that basically just expands and contracts, leaves a slime trail, feeds nutrients to itself and spends a whole lot of time out in the forest where people don't necessarily see it unless they go out and look. Because it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.